I don't know if any of you are familiar with the movie Man on Fire with Denzel Washington. Great movie, came out a number of years ago. In my view, Denzel's played me versions of me in three different movies. He doesn't call, he doesn't write, he doesn't say thank you. You know why? You just gotta live with that. But in Man on Fire, if you saw that movie, and if you hadn't, haven't, I recommend it. It's a great film. Who does he negotiate with? The voice. The voice's job was to negotiate. That's what he did for the bad guys. So let's go back to what Dennis was telling me about how the kidnappings are set up and what to expect. I read a lot of neuroscience these days. And one of my favorite speakers that I listen to, a guy named Andrew Huberman. He does Huberman Labs out of Stanford. He does a podcast. I listen to it all the time. Huberman, on one of his podcasts, was talking about that in all situations, ALL, all situations, human beings navigate the situation based on three concepts: DPO, duration, path, and outcome. DPO, duration, path, and outcome. Where do I want to go? How long is it going to take me to get there? And how am I going to get there? DPO, exact same thing that Dennis explained to me way back when on kidnapping. One more reason why this stuff applies to human beings. I'll give you another crazy reason why kidnapping negotiation applies to all negotiations. Ambassadors, FBI heads in country would always ask me, how long is this going to take? When's this kidnapping going to be over? When are you going to get the victim out? My answer would be, we'll get the victim out as soon as the kidnappers feel like they've gotten everything they could. What's the operative word there? Not that they got everything that they could, but that they feel like it. How absurd is it that I'm handling an international kidnapping and I'm talking about kidnappers' feelings? If we got a kidnapping in Al-Qaeda, the key to the kidnapping is going to be Al-Qaeda's feelings. This is human nature at work. So I'm going to tell you about a kidnapping that took place in Haiti. 12-year-old boy gets grabbed. 12-year-old boy is an American citizen. He's a dual national. He's the only American in the family that gets grabbed. Now, a couple of interesting things about this. Interesting to me, anyway. You might not find them interesting. What difference does it make that he's a dual national? Well, here's another thing about the kidnapping business. They really don't like grabbing Americans. No, doesn't every kidnapping industry anywhere in the world, whether it be Haiti, whether it be Iraq, you know, whether it be the Philippines, they want to grab locals. They don't want to grab outsiders, particularly Americans. But wait a minute, aren't Americans supposed to have a great big giant price tag on them on their head? Shouldn't you want to kidnap Americans? Well, if you're in business, what's one of the last things you want to have happen? What do you hate in business? What you hate is more government regulation. You grab an American, pretty soon Uncle Sam, the US government, shows up in your country with politicians, with military people, with law enforcement people, with lawyers, and they start interfering in the local operation. That's more government regulation. You don't grab American citizens because you don't need the American government showing up and telling everybody how to do things. So the vast majority of the kidnappings are worked internationally. When an American was taken, the bad guys didn't even know they had an American, which is the case when they grabbed this 12-year-old boy. Now, they have grabbed this 12-year-old boy in a carjacking, which is an interesting business model. You know, carjack a car with more than one person in it, let one of those people go. They notify the family right away. There's all sorts of advantages to this model of kidnapping, not the least of which is what happens if you grab the one person in that family that nobody likes? You got a car. You're still going to get paid. This is you got an asset. You're gonna liquidate the asset. This is a business transaction where you're guaranteed to at least get something out of it. That's one great thing about the business model in Haiti at the time. So 12-year-old boys have been grabbed. He's the only American citizen in his family. His father's not an American citizen. But he goes to the US government, says, my son's an American citizen. You got to help us. And they tell him, the FBI is going to be there to help you. Now, I don't know what would go through your mind if you were told that the FBI was going to be there to help you? Probably, maybe about 15 minutes later, you might hear a knock at the front door, and these guys would be there. Maybe they'd even have on FBI hats to prove that they were FBI agents. Instead, about 15 minutes after this father's told the FBI is going to be there to help him, he gets a call from some guy named Chris Voss, who says he's in Washington, D.C. And he literally says to me on the phone, "You're in Washington, D.C. How are you going to help me?" Now put yourself in my place. What would you say? Put yourself in my place. How long before this father hangs up the phone? Now, put yourself in your place. Isn't this exactly what everybody that you deal with on behalf of Zoom is saying to themselves about you? How are you going to help me? Do you have any idea what my challenges are? How are you going to help me? How long do you have before one of your customers, one of your clients, hangs up the phone? If not literally, figuratively. How long did I have with this father? How long do you have on a daily basis? If you check the data, how long do you have to make a first impression? Which, by the way, I will tell you is the second most important impression. I'm going to spend some time on first impressions over the coming moments, and it's the second most important impression. What's the most important impression? The last impression. The last impression is the lasting impression. Let's go back to the first impression. In that 7 to 10 second window that you have, what do you have to establish? 7 to 10 seconds. Do you know? Trust. Trust and competence. Not confidence. Competence. 7 to 10 seconds. And the difference between competence and confidence, because there's a lot of coaching to be confident. A lot of people think they get a long way with confidence. Would you rather have a confident plumber or a competent plumber? Trust and competence. All right, cool. You say to yourself, all right, I'm willing to accept that. 7 to 10 seconds seems like a narrow window. How do I establish that? Your resume correlates loosely with whether or not you know what you're doing. You know this now. Your company's capabilities listed out in a value proposition correlate loosely with whether or not someone can trust you to solve their problem. If it correlated strongly, you guys wouldn't even need to talk to clients. You just slide your resume across the table, email them your resume, email them your list of capabilities, and they look at your resume and go like, oh, this person knows what they're talking about. Wow, these capabilities look good. Deal. Where can we sign? No, that doesn't happen. The human factor comes into play. 7 to 10 seconds. So how did I establish that with this father instead of trotting out my resume? Because I'd done it wrong before. Here's what I said to this father. All right, Haitian kidnappers are not killing kidnap victims these days. I realize that's really stupid because they kill each other at the drop of a hat, but for whatever reason, they're not killing kidnap victims. Now, today is Thursday, and Haitian kidnappers love to party on Saturday night. If you say the things that I want you to say when I want you to say them, we will have you sent out late Friday, early Saturday morning. He said to me, tell me what you want me to do. And we had a sent out Saturday morning. So what did I do? And what, more importantly, what did I not do? Here's what I did do. Here's what you're up against. I outlined to him that I understood his challenges by telling him what they are. You're going to get one or two responses when you do that, and you need to do that to your clients, with your clients. They're either going to say that's right, or they're going to correct you. That's right is when someone says, when they feel you get it. You get it. They don't say you're right. They say that's right. When you get it. When you get it so much that it either creates an epiphany in them or gives them a feeling of relief because you get it so much. And what happens when you begin to establish trust-based influence when they say that's right? Each and every time somebody says that's right to you, they get a hit of oxytocin, which is a neurochemical, which is a bonding drug. Bottom right-hand corner of your screen. Oxytocin is what parents feel when they lay their eyes on their child for the first time. Probably by now you're like, all right, I get it. Oxytocin is a good thing. But I don't want them to correct me because I would be embarrassed. That's what's going to hold you back. When you outline somebody's challenges, you're horrified. Horrified at making a mistake and getting corrected. When someone corrects you, they're stepping to your side. It's such a powerful technique because people love correction. I think Maya Angelou said, people don't remember what you say. They remember how you made them feel. When someone corrects you, they feel good. They want more of it. They've come around the table and they put their arm around you and they're stepping to your side.